Welcome, and thank you for listening to this recording, part of the Comprehensive Opioid Stimulant and Substance Abuse Program, or COSAP, podcast series. COSAP provides financial and technical assistance to states and units of local and Indian tribal governments to plan, develop, and implement comprehensive efforts to identify, respond to, treat, and support those impacted by the opioid epidemic. Since 2017, BJA has supported innovative work on these COSAP sites across the nation. Funding and programmatic support for COSAP is provided by the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, or BJA. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of the U.S. Department of Justice.
In this podcast, we will be exploring how two different organizations use peer recovery support services to strengthen the collaboration of their substance use, mental health, and law enforcement professionals and service provision from across the country. I'm your host, Mackenzie Simmons, and I currently serve as a behavioral health analyst for the Bureau of Justice Assistance Comprehensive Opioid, Stimulant, and Substance Abuse Program Training and Technical Assistance Center that is operated by Altarum. Today, we have two wonderful subject matter experts, Sadie Thompson with the Wellbeing Initiatives, Inc. out of Lincoln, Nebraska, and Rich Alexander with the Burlington County Prosecutor's Office in Burlington, New Jersey. Thank you all for being with us today. Our conversation will be broken into four episodes to make it easy to select topics that may be of interest to our listeners. Episode one will focus on program overviews and the sequential intercept model. Episode two, partnerships. Episode three, equitable programming, and episode four, sustainability. Additionally, there will be a concluding episode where we will examine key takeaways and a review of goals. We'll begin with episode one, program overviews and the sequential intercept model. If each of you could please introduce yourself, tell us about your role, and tell us about your program. So how was it developed, the populations you serve, and the impact it's made on your community? Rich, would you mind getting us started?
Sure, I'd be glad to, Mackenzie. Thank you. And I just want to say, I'm glad to be part of this, and I'm fortunate to be working in this field. It's a long time goal of mine. So my name is Rich Alexander, and I'm the project manager of Operation Helping Hand in Burlington County, New Jersey. I'm also a person in long-term recovery. And what that means to me is that I haven't had a drink or a drug for more than 30 years. So I'm very fortunate, to say the least. So during my recovery, I became an MBA while working in healthcare in corporate America. And now as a consultant leading these programs, it gives me a unique knowledge of leading multiple programs. And thanks to our COSAP grant, we've been able to expand Operation Helping Hand. We've been able to expand the programs in a way that include the following. We have four or five programs, and it originally started with self-referral initiative, which we call Straight to Treatment. And currently, 7 days a week, we have an individual police department that anyone could walk into. You don't even have to be from our county. And anyone could walk into and let the people there know that they want to go to treatment. And this was the flagship program for Burlington County Prosecutor's Office. And it started with two police departments back in 2018. Then it expanded to five, and now just this year, we've doubled that to 10. So we're really excited about that. We have people in different police departments, and we just launched that in October, and already we've had three, four people come in and go to treatment just because they're there and they've been hearing about what we're doing. So that's just amazing. And then we have, which I consider is now our flagship program is a 24/7 operation, which is mainly a deflection program where law enforcement calls a referral line, having recovery coaches respond to the scene of 911 calls. And this program started as a 3-month pilot program in 2019 when we received additional grant from. This started as a pilot program in 2019 when Burlington County Prosecutor's Office received additional grant funds from the Attorney General's Office in New Jersey. So with the success of the program, we eventually got additional grant funds. So it grew on itself. And when the funds became available, We started in May of 2020, and we've been going, you know, nonstop 24/7 since then, that we have a recovery coach on call that a law enforcement officer can call. They, someone who ODs or someone who is under the influence of alcohol and wants to go to treatment or wants to talk to a recovery specialist, the law enforcement officer would call our referral line. And another program we have, which is Hope One, is our outreach van that is run by the sheriff's office that we do not oversee, but with our COSAP funding, we're working closely with Hope One so that they can go into the community more often. So we're taking some of our funding so they can be out in the community more. And sometimes it supports our programs, or and other times they can do what suits them. And recently we've been given access to inmates at the county jail. And this is just started in August, where anybody who's in the county jail can call a line free and get one of our recovery coaches on the line and discuss with them and strategize with them to help them deal with life when they leave jail. You know, the inmates at the county jail have free access to a recovery coach through the phone line, and it prepares them for their journey once they leave Burlington County Jail. And then finally, we have the GAP initiative, which is a flexible law enforcement and peer outreach model where peers team up with officers on ride-alongs. And each community will determine what that looks like. They can go to different areas in the town where they know people may be homeless, or they can go to a local event and have a table and work together to let the community know that people can come to an officer in that town, and that town can immediately, within less than an hour, have them align with recovery services. So it's really exciting, all these programs. So overall, you know, we serve those in Burlington County with substance use issues that present to law enforcement. And of course, we'd prefer everything to be deflected. That is that no one would get arrested in any situation. Yet, if people end up in the legal systems, we're not going to turn our back on them. So we provide those also with recovery services, regardless of the situation and their legal status.
That's incredible, Rich. That is such a wonderful wraparound program that sounds like it's just incredibly impactful for the community. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate you.
You're welcome, Mackenzie.
Sadie, would you mind telling us more about your role and your program?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for inviting me to be a part of this podcast, Mackenzie. So I am the Chief Implementation Officer for Wellbeing Initiative. Wellbeing Initiative is a peer-run organization. Our mission is to empower individuals with living with mental health and substance use challenges to reach their fullest potential. That includes a lot of things. In 2018, our organization was awarded the Statewide Consumer Network Grant through SAMHSA. And Danielle, my business partner, started with the Wellbeing Initiative at that time. And it was really in a transition phase. I worked for a different organization at that time, but Danielle and I really partnered up to develop a curriculum for peer support in Nebraska, really utilizing all of the other peer support curricula out there to try to kind of make a best of the best or a best of. And so that was certified through the state of Nebraska in 2019. And then I began contracting with Wellbeing Initiative for just some technical assistance as I was growing program from one peer support specialist in the agency I was at to 14 different peer support specialists in 13 different programs, and was really, really excited to be able to expand peer support within that agency. I ended up moving to Wellbeing Initiative because I found my passion in peer support. I'm a person that's in recovery from mental health and substance use challenges. For me, that means I haven't had a drink in over 11 years, but my mental health recovery journey is always a work in progress. So when I started in January of 2020, Wellbeing Initiative was really small. It was just the two of us. We've now expanded to have over 16 employees, which is really exciting. 16 employees and a marketing intern, and we're just continuing to grow. So we were initially awarded a sub-award for another SAMHSA grant to integrate peer support into the Native American communities in Nebraska. And we have several reservations and communities here in Nebraska that really benefited from that work. We also expanded to start providing a direct recovery community navigation across the state with our statewide consumer network. So when somebody contacted us about training or about needing recovery resources, we were on call kind of support system for that. Following that, we have been awarded a HRSA grant to implement our peer support curricula into the community colleges here in Nebraska. We also developed a curriculum to help agencies implement peer support services within an integrated model in the criminal justice system and in physical health care settings. So this has kind of gone alongside the whole CCBHC expansion as well. So as agencies are looking to become more integrated, they're looking to include peer support services more. We were just awarded this last year a Building Communities of Recovery grant, which is an expansion of a grant we have through the CDC Foundation with the Division of Public Health at Nebraska's Department of Health and Human Services. And so we currently have 4 navigators in Lancaster and surrounding counties working directly with community members who've experienced overdose, are at risk of experiencing overdose, or friends and family members of people who have experienced overdose. Our Building Communities of Recovery grant is an expansion upon that into 3 rural areas in Nebraska. And so we're really excited to be able to be partnering with the public health departments and the behavioral health regions out in rural Nebraska to provide this valuable resource. So our recovery community navigators work within all the different level intercepts, especially pre and post. So 0 and 4 and 5, I'd say 0, 1, 4, and 5 are our primary areas of focus. We do prevention education. We get referrals from police after someone experiences an overdose or is connected to someone who's experienced an overdose. And then we also provide navigation from referrals from probation and parole as someone's leaving and may be at risk of relapse or, you know, has stated concerns about being at risk of relapse and really wants to be connected to recovery resources in the community.
Thanks, Sadie. Your innovation and passion can really be seen and heard, and it's really exciting to hear about all the wonderful things that Wellbeing Initiative is doing for your community and also the entire state of Nebraska. So as a quick reference for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with the sequential intercept model, the sequential intercept model details how individuals with mental and substance use disorders come into contact with and move through the criminal justice system. There are 6 total intercepts: intercept 0, community services; intercept 1, law enforcement; intercept 2, initial court hearings and initial detentions; intercept 3, jails and courts; intercept 4, reentry; and intercept 5, community corrections. Could each of you talk to me about the intercepts that you work with within the sequential intercept model? Rich, I'll begin with you if that is okay.
Yeah, that sounds good, Mackenzie. We mainly, our connection is working with law enforcement. And the way I look at it is we're positively influencing officers' behavior by offering them a viable solution to the issues they run into daily. Law enforcement is a unique position to divert people from the legal system. 2 things that we've learned years ago is law enforcement isn't going to arrest their way out of this opioid crisis. And the other thing is that officers are not social workers. So we're now the reliable partners for them to reach out to expand, you know, their commitment to serving their communities. It's not put on their shoulders. They have someone who can work with them. They can connect a person to recovery services through one of our peers, and they can feel good about it. They know that we're going to work with this person, and the person isn't going to come back and complain, or so we're really working with law enforcement to make their job easier and to help them serve the community. And also in working with law enforcement, we do respond to people that go to the emergency department and those who refuse to go to the ED, you know, which would be really at the community services intercept, but that's much more limited. And as I mentioned, you know, with the COSAP expansion to our programs, we're now working with the county jail. And literally, while we were just recording this, I just got a call from the county jail, and I had to put the call on hold and just spoke with someone who is going to be getting out of jail and going directly to treatment. So it's just amazing that as we're starting to work with the county jail, that the social workers are sitting in on the call we have with the person. And I just asked, is there a way for them to contact the treatment center, you know, from jail? And there really is no way. And the social worker can make that possible. And in this case, they did. And this person is now set up to go to treatment directly from jail. And it's going to be up to the judge to decide. And that's what we always tell everybody we work with, is that the judge makes the decision. It's not up to me. And I was asked to write a letter. And we can gladly write a letter that I've been talking with this person and that they're very interested in services and they want to get a ride. So we'll arrange transportation. If it's not arranged through the jail, we'll take care of that. So it's just amazing. It's literally happening in the moment. We also, when dealing with people in this situation, which we've only been doing since we've gotten the funds from COSAP, is we're learning as we go. And admittedly, very naive to the situation and learning, you know, people are leaving, they're literally homeless, they have no money, they have no ID, and they have no phone when they leave the jail. And so they really have limited or no access to services. They can't call someone to help them. So as part of our program at this intercept, we're offering scholarships to sober living. And we're also getting phones to people. We're having an issue getting a contractor to do that, but we're working on that. And soon we'll have phones to give someone when they leave the jail. And so we're excited about that. And we're excited for those who want a chance, they want to get help, and they're saying it, and we want to give them what they need to succeed.
Thank you. And absolutely, how cool that, and what a serendipitous moment that as we're on this podcast, you get a call from someone who is getting out of jail and looking for support. So that's really neat to hear.
Yeah, it was great. You can't make this up. You can't make that up.
And what a great perspective, especially for our law enforcement community. We work with law enforcement agencies from across the country, and I think it's important for them to be part of the conversation as well, especially when we talk about support and understanding that aspect of it. So that's really great and unique. And I think that there can be a lot to learn from that. So thank you, Rich.
You're welcome.
Sadie, would you talk to me a little bit about the intercepts that you all work with?
Sure. Yeah. So our navigators are primarily in the community. So I'd say they are located at Intercept Zero. But like I said, we do get referrals from law enforcement. So our navigators are providing prevention education, Narcan administration education, as well as substance use education for youth and adolescents. But they're also getting referrals from law enforcement when somebody has an overdose incident. And after we've received that referral, generally, our navigators work with someone all the way through the process of being sentenced, maybe either to jail, prison, or community corrections sentence. So our navigators will attend court hearings with folks and visit people inside the county jails. We do have currently 4 different support groups in 4 different county jails outside of Lancaster County, where Lincoln is, and then we are just this week have found out that we will be able to send a navigator into Lancaster County Jail, which is huge, one day a week to provide groups and support there for individuals with substance use challenges. So we're excited about that and to be able to provide that support when somebody's getting ready to be released from jail. We know that the transition periods are some of the most high risk for relapse and or overdose. And so preparing folks to be ready to be released and creating plans of action and wellness plans for when they're leaving, as well as following up with them after they've been released and, you know, walking alongside them as they're kind of putting their life back together or getting back into employment or finding housing and that kind of thing. And then finally, you know, when we're working with people on parole, I think it's a lot of that same work, but also includes things like our whole health employment support training, which is, you know, really kind of narrowing in on soft skills and basic job skills that someone might be needing some refresher on if they've been incarcerated for an extended period of time or experiencing a substance use challenge for an extended period of time and maybe don't have a lot of work skills. So that whole health employment support and training program really kind of gets people to where they want to be financially and as far as self-sustainability goes.
So that sounds like you guys are really getting everybody prepared for whatever life throws at them and are willing to walk with them as they kind of navigate the world in whatever circumstance they may be in.
Totally.
And when you talk about the training initiative to get people prepared, is that something that anyone could have access to? Is that on your website or is it accessible to someone who's maybe not a part of your program?
Actually, the West Whole Health Employment Support and Training, we just call it West because that's a lot of words. Our West program started as a non-criminal justice initiative and just really ties well in to working alongside people in a reentry fashion. But our trainer and curriculum developer actually trains facilitators. So anybody that's interested in becoming a West facilitator can access that. Anybody that's interested in attending a West group can access that through our Wellness and Education Center in a hybrid digital and in-person format.
That sounds fantastic because I know when you and I got to meet at the conference we attended, that was something that was such a big topic of conversation with really having something laid out so that you could have someone in a supervisor role be able to administer things and have it be really well-rounded for everyone within that community. You know, so there's no kind of confusion on steps that they need to take or what needs to be done. It sounds like you guys have kind of mapped it out and made it really nice and easy to digest.
That's our hope anyway.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To learn more about how COSAP is supporting communities across the nation, visit us at www.cosapresources.org. We also welcome your email at cosap@iir.com.